Class is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hi, everybody, and good evening. Here from Finland, where it is 8 o'clock at night and 5 p.m. in GMT, and hopefully for those in South America and America, better time, but not, I'm afraid, not so much for the people in the South Pacific. Anyway, I'd surely like to welcome you. We're on the science of triangles, and let's see, where are we in this? I think, yeah, we're in program number 40. Is it 47 or 48? I seem to have made a mistake here. So maybe it's 48. I don't know. I'll find out pretty soon. And this will be available to you through the good offices of BL on the Moria, not on the Moria Federation, but on what's it on? Where it's going to be available?
Makara.
Makara is on Makara, and I'm looking up now to see which one it is.
It's 48.
Okay. Is it 48? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you all. Thank you very much. So look, we have a very interesting subject tonight, really interesting, because we all go through a lot of crises, you know, and if we think we go through crises in one life, well, just think of what it's like in thousands of reincarnational cycles. So some of the major crises are being discussed here in terms of the zodiacal signs, and then, of course, it's possible to put these things together in triangles, depending upon what is your topic. You know, if you want to look at the first, second, and third initiation, you might choose like, you know, I mean, of course, this is not rigid, but you might choose Leo, Scorpio, and Capricorn. That would give you the first, second, and third initiation. There are other ways to do it, of course. If you want to look at the crisis that involves becoming a group conscious and then finally becoming conscious of the one, you might do it this way. You might say, well, okay, here's a triangle, and it's Leo, Virgo, and I think Aquarius, maybe Aquarius and or Pisces. Either one of those will give the more universal picture. Everyone's going through some kind of crisis. A crisis is a determining point where choice has to be made. And it may not be one of the ones that DK lists, but you've got to know, I mean, you know, DK essentially said, look, if you're not having a crisis, why aren't you having one? So, you know, he knows that that's the fast way, not to live the easy life, either outward or inwardly. And the old saying is, and it's kind of a joke, but okay, I may have mentioned it before, that the personality loves trines in your horoscope and the soul loves squares and maybe oppositions also. So when things look rough and we're having a difficult time or a difficult life, as the case may be, maybe it's all for the good of our consciousness in the long run. I just want to welcome you here. I can only do it once, as I told you. So when you come a little bit later, you know, there you are, and we're glad for your presence. But hi, Anne and Anne-Marie, and Annette, and Antoinette, and Barbara, and Brennan, and Catherine, Helen, Karen, Mariana, Mary, Nienke, Sandra, Tia, Zenaide, and Veronica. Now, there'll be people coming later, but okay, you know, everybody's welcome, right? And over here on the staff side, our gratitude to BL, Joe and Michael Stacy for helping to uphold us, and Tuya's here with her presence on the staff side, and so am I. So we should be able to you know, get into some, I think, oh, and Risto, hi, Risto, you've come too. So some interesting things here. But I just want to begin by with the idea that we are tuning in on triangles of many different kinds. Some of them are like three zodiacal signs, let's say. Or some of them are like one super constellation and two zodiacal signs, or two zodiacal signs and one, let's say, solar logos, or maybe a planetary logos, or three planetary, three solar logoi. See, let me give you an example. Suppose we look at our solar logos and then the solar logos called Procyon, and then the solar logos called Sirius. Procyon is on its way to Sirius, and we're looking at a heart and an ajna and probably a head center. So it's important. And so it goes, you know, three planetary logoi will form a triangle, but then sometimes we have a couple of planetary logoi and a kingdom in nature. And sometimes a couple of planetary logoi and one of the major centers of the Earth, you know. So there's all kinds of ways to configure triangles, and they give us a perspective of energy flows until, you know, that great day comes. Well, one of the great days when you're on the mountaintop in consciousness in Capricorn, and you see the flow of the energies, like it's all lit up for you, and there's an amazing sense of astonishment or astounding, either astonished or astounding. The disciple is either astonished or astounded to see these flows and realizes what an amazing kind of interplay that disciple is involved in. We have a lot to realize yet, a lot to realize. You stop to think, you know, hi, Laura, you're here too, and Lou Dean, you're here, welcome. Sometimes we think that it's a very long time, the duration of a universe, and it is a very long time, as time counts on our planet Earth, or at least is measured. And Sheldon, hi. Okay, those are issues that we will experience a long time. After the solar system disappears, we're not done with the astral body and the mental body of the solar logos. We have a long, long way to go. But when you think about that, this is the most recent in a beginningless, infinite series of universes, according to the great breath. Well, you know, it gets really mysterious. As Aristotle said, infinity is not traversable, at least linearly, it's not. And in this book I'm attempting to write, I hope to deal with some of those paradoxes, because they really are, you know, amazing paradoxes. It's like you just can't even, you say, well, I'm here, but how'd you get here? And you find you can't have gotten here by the normal methods at all. So pretty soon we'll discover there's no time and no space and no extension, and it's all happening, but it's not happening. There's a lot of paradoxes, and but meanwhile, we're into the relative world, which is, I think, very important, because every time you have a universe, you have to make it right according to the design on the very highest vibratory levels of the universe. And it makes us all feel like the tiniest of things, but then we are, and so is everything else. What we learn finally is that, well, let me put it this way, everything is the same size. I know it seems crazy to say that the tiniest little atom is the same size ultimately as the universe itself, but that's the way it turns out when you start comparing things to absolute infinity. So I just put a little plug in there for some ways of thinking that help to open up the abstract mind, which we do have to cultivate during the next 2,000 years. So we're looking out there, and in here, our etheric body is filled with triangles. The etheric body of the groups are all triangulated, and of the communities and nations, and finally of humanity, and somehow a mixture of squares, triangles, and circles will cover the development of the etheric body for all kinds of kingdoms that we can find on Earth. So we're trying to, you know, the practical side, like maybe was this morning, where we were at our usual YouTube channel and we're dealing simply with each other in our little triangles and in our own little triangle networks as they relate to the larger network and then to the Buddhas of activity and so forth. We're dealing with that, but here we're trying to expand our mind to know more about what's really happening in a solar systemic and a cosmic sense. So let's hope that something of that begins to dawn upon us now. It's important to have the big picture and the more individual personal picture because, you know, we have to be able to handle our individuality before our real group potential is unfolded. But if you keep on removing all the veils, as inevitably happens on the evolutionary arc of any universe, you're going to find out that that your identity, my identity, is much different than anything we've ever suspected. Okay, so I'll get into that now a little bit, and just want to, and hi, Anna, you're here too. Okay, well, that's all I can do to greet everybody. Glad you persist, you know. It's a difficult subject, and we just learned the ABCs of this. And in around the year 2025, some of the beginning books that DK will be writing will be on astrology. At least he seems to indicate that's the case, and maybe we will understand why who he is, because there's already a lot of pretend DKs out there somehow writing as if they were in touch with him. You know, what are you going to do? You just have to assess the quality of what you're getting there and compare it to what you know could only have been written by a master. So, you know, kind of take notes as you go along here. And what I'm going to do, this is, we'll see how far we get. I just don't know yet. We always get less far than I hope. But this is starting with the idea of crises. There are, as I pointed out, we're on page 472, pointed out earlier, seven great crises in connection with the human being upon the path of evolution. You know, and there are other crises that are not listed necessarily here. Something involves Libra and another view at Capricorn and another view of Leo. Choice points, you know. And we are, I remember, you know, reading Manly Hall a long time ago. He was a wonderful scholar. And, you know, born to the task, as you could tell, having written that amazing book about the Masonic, Kabbalistic, Rosicrucian, and Hermetic symbolic philosophy, which Francis Donald is now taking us through, which is great, you know, in his webinars. He said, well, where we stand now on our evolutionary path is exactly where we should be standing according to the decisions, choices that we have made. So choices are important. Seven great crises in connection with the human being upon the path of evolution, they cover the earlier, the later, and the final stages of his growth, and they are not absolutely inclusive. As I say, there are other things, and there are interim crises which each one of us should be having, because after all, we are members of the crisis kingdom, at least on this planet. The fourth ray is the ray of crisis, and we're members of the fourth kingdom and the fourth monadic group on the cosmic physical plane, and we should be having these crises and resolve them into the type of harmony which is useful to the divine plan. I mean, you can resolve a crisis in many ways, and they're not all of them good. You know, you can run away from the implications. You can keep the harmony at any cost. You can ignore the struggle that is required of you. There's all kinds of ways of evading a real crisis where you let the inner warrior fight within you, especially for fourth ray souls, and there's going to be a lot of them coming in. So anyway, the earlier stages, the later stages, and the final stages. These, it should be borne in mind, are precipitated through the conditioning energy or influences of seven great constellations, and let's consider for a moment what they are, the crises of the soul. So we have the crisis, the quality, the constellation from which it comes, and the cross on which we find it. It doesn't mean that if we have a crisis occurring on the cardinal cross, that we are necessarily liberated beings, because all these crosses work on different levels, but are most essentially characteristic of a certain level. And we'll see that right away with the cardinal cross, you know. Okay, so the very first crisis for a human being, whether or not the solar angel is involved, it wasn't necessarily involved on the moon chain, nor was it necessarily involved in the previous major solar system, but it is now. And, you know, the taking of a form, of a periodical form of flesh. And, of course, they were huge forms in the old days, as we are told, huge tabernacles of clay. You know, I mean, there were probably days in which, instead of taking your cat or dog for a walk, you could have taken your rather formidable dinosaur as a walk and still told it to behave. So we had really huge human beings at the time, huge, 60 feet, you know, I mean, and in Atlantis maybe more like 30 feet, but in Lemuria, just huge. Now the quality here is individualization, or a gradual coming to one's self, or to recognize that one stands apart from everything else that is perceived and that one does have a center. The constellation involved is Cancer, providing that vehicle of substance out of which, through which, the newly made soul can express. And let's not leave Cancer alone there. Let's say how important Gemini and Leo are also in this incarnational process. This relationship between the higher and the lower pairs of opposites is coming in through Gemini, and the shining forth of an individualized center is a very Leonian thing. And the cross is the cardinal cross. You know that. Now, take advantage of the opportunity to learn a little esoteric astrology here, because it just so happens that the most continuous presentation on triangles is given in the esoteric astrology book. But also, we're very grateful to Starling Hunter, who has, I think, done more somehow work on triangles than anybody I know. You know, he sent along some compilations and things that he has used, and he does have a sort of a magnum opus called The Compass of Light, and it's on the Great Invocation, and so you can write him and maybe obtain what he has done so far on that. But he's a real scholar, and he's worked very hard at these things. So anyway, the crisis of incarnation, sometimes we are told that it occurs in Cancer, which it does when considering the mass of human beings who are individualizing. But it also, we're told that the very first truly singular incarnation that anybody, any one of us may take, is done in the sign Pisces. Go forth into matter is sort of the key mantra there. So that took place a long time ago, but now, naturally, we're trying to incarnate the soul fully, and we're trying to incarnate the triad fully, and we're trying to eventually incarnate the monad fully. So this crisis of incarnation is always with us, and wherever there's a vehicle through which we are operating, a temple of Solomon, temple of Ezekiel, the tabernacle in the wilderness, rough and crude, the sign Cancer is always suggested. Okay? Now, the next crisis we've got here is called the crisis of orientation. And let's see here. Well, you know, we're constantly building up this egoic lotus. And there's a sense in which some of the petals begin to turn in a different direction, some of the circles of the petals. Basically, what it's all about is that the energy flows within your own etheric system and general personal system start to go in another direction. At first, the higher energies come in and pass right through the higher chakras and anchor themselves in the lower chakras and feed them. But later, these higher energies do stop at the higher chakras, and they also begin to draw up the energy which was localized in the lower chakras. And that's a definite energy reversal that takes lifetimes and lots of struggle. So when you're going to begin going in a new direction, Aries is a very good sign for it. We may remember, you know, if we wanted to, I just always want to give you kind of a little picture of things because it's helpful. AB Books, and let's see. I want to know where to go. The reversal of the wheel. Well, okay, I'll tell you what, maybe 590 something. He kind of deals with different constellations related to the rays, and he tells us, maybe more towards page 60, because he doesn't seem to have everything here the way I'm used to seeing it. But what we want to understand is that Uranus, the planet of reversal, is very powerful in the sign Aries. As a matter of fact, it's the hierarchical ruler, and it means basically going in another direction. So it looks like I'm not... Yeah, there it is. Okay. Oh, no. Those are the comparisons. Comparisons. And here we go. Yep, this is what I'm looking for. Notice that the highest of the rulers of Aries, talk about triangles, right? All of these have a lot to do with the mind, concrete mind for Mars, and various types of mind for Mercury, and then finally the higher occult mind for Uranus. So this triangle will be a triangle of the mind, but we don't have to look at every triangle. Uranus is the planet of reversal. So if you've been going along in one direction, which is very sort of traditional, what you'll find is Uranus comes along and says, this is your archetype, and this is the direction you should be going, and everything kind of turns upside down and backwards, and then you're caught in this, some energy is moving in one direction and some in another, and a lot of us are going through that. We have not broken free and broken clear of the energies which are moving in the lower, to stimulate the lower chakras. That takes a lot of lifetimes. So Aries basically gives you the chance to start turning in another direction, you might say, and to begin to become aware, as it happens in this second tier of petals, 4, 5, and 6, to become aware of a new way that the chakras can respond. Now, the chakras are divided into various aspects, and there's kind of an outer level of response and a very powerful, finally, inner jeweled level of response. And we're beginning to move towards the higher spiritual, divine level of response when we reverse the wheel. Now, what that means is that we're going to begin, finally, to respond to the higher of the pairs of opposites. In the petal, in the circle of ignorance, the hall of ignorance, 1, 2, 3, we may be smart enough and responsive enough, but we're not aware of the soul level of the opposites. And finally, when we get into the 4, 5, and 6, we become aware of the higher level of response of the opposites, and a reversal takes place, and the energy starts moving in a new direction. At least when we have a sign, an energy, we begin to appropriate the higher parts of that particular energy. And as aspirants and disciples in training, we should right now be in the process of doing that. So Aries makes a lot of sense. You're heading off into a new way of going. And sometimes I have a feeling this takes place in the fifth petal. You enter like a tremendous egotist, and you pretty much only see yourself in the middle of your field of consciousness, and the world revolves around you. And then comes the big battle between Scorpio and Leo, and your tower falls, you know, in the tarot, the crash tower, the blasted tower, until you've been humbled enough in the last part of this long fifth petal process to begin to be an aspirant. And there's another kind of little triangle, you know, the there is the egotist, the struggler, and the aspirant, you know, until finally when it's entirely open, you can take, and it does indicate that you can take the first initiation. Now, what about the crisis of initiation? Okay. Well, what have I said here? It's not listing here Libra and Scorpio, which also gives crisis of the soul along a different line. Well, okay, the, you know, Scorpio being such a fourth-rate sign, and even Taurus, let's struggle beyond dismayed, and Libra definitely presents a kind of crisis, but we'll get into that later. Now we have, how did he call these sort of the, seven great crises in connection with the human being upon the path of evolution. So this is very general, and everybody has to go through this, right? Okay. So now the next one is maybe more familiar to us, because I can see where the drama of reversal, and by the way, reversal of the wheel, it says decay, can also occur when you have the Sun in Leo and Libra rising, or maybe the Sun in Libra and Leo rising. There's a point there where a choice is made and you start going in a different direction. So it's like I say, it's not only Aries that gives us the reversal, but DK is talking about that. And by the way, it may be interesting for you to know that the two signs that I'm talking about, Leo and Libra, both have a powerful Uranus, the planet of reversal. Uranus is the esoteric ruler of Libra, and Uranus is the veiled hierarchical ruler of Leo. Okay, so let's see if I can find this Leo, Libra, reversal. Maybe this is, let's see what it says here. It might be possible to discover whether the particular life in which a man carries forward, right, the process of reversal may not perhaps be one in which the Sun is in Libra with Libra rising. So he's asking for an investigation here, and you can see how that would work, can't you? The man is an egotist. But what happens is that the Sun, which is glorified in Leo, falls in Libra. And so you have to consider the other person and not just yourself. So it's a very good one for, you know, considering the larger group and the larger whole. Libra controls the moment of reversal. So if you want to look at reversal of the wheel, go to page 183. Of esoteric astrology. Let's see if there's anything else here that I might come in touch with. Well, you know, he says some amazing things here about then comes the moment of the reversal of the wheel and the beginning of the new orientation of discipleship in Scorpio. So if we're really a disciple, Scorpio on some level or another is operating with us. Now, okay, the next one, I don't know how many I'll get to today, but they're really interesting, is the crisis of initiation. Now, normally when you think of the sign Capricorn and the planet Saturn, you know, you oftentimes think of restriction. But what happens is that your responsiveness to lower energies gets restricted So your higher consciousness expands, you see. So it may be tough on the physical plane. It may be tough going with Saturn in terms of your normal personality equipment, but maybe something is really growing here in the consciousness sense. And that's what esoteric astrology is all about. It is the astrology of consciousness rather than the astrology of events. You know, I mean, events are important, depends on the type of consciousness you gather from it, but it's possible to go through all kinds of things successfully and say, hey, look, I got out of that alive, and you didn't learn a darn thing. So that would be a failure, even though from the material point of view, it was a success. So, okay, crisis of initiation, expansion on the mountaintop, the expansion of the consciousness and of potency as well, because you really now begin to respond to the monad, maybe not as consciously as later, but there's an empowerment here. Let us remember that it's not only the fifth ray that involves initiation on the mountaintop. There's a lot of first ray in that. And when you look at Capricorn, it is the distributor of the first ray, the third ray, and the seventh ray. So it's a very first ray sign. And there's even one place where DK kind of hints that the fifth ray is involved. So all the four rays of form, the hardline rays, are involved. Okay, so what have we got so far? You know, 20 something million years ago, for those who are part of Earth Chain humanity, there was a crisis of incarnation. Also in Atlantis there is, but those people are not yet, you know, they haven't had enough time yet in general to become disciples. Then you reach, after millions of years, a point at which you are satiated with fulfilling the desires of the personality. And then you start going towards the initiations of the threshold, ruled by so many planets and signs, but let's say, in general, Leo ruling the first initiation and Scorpio ruling the second initiation. Sometimes DK also lists a Gemini and Virgo for the first initiation, but let's just say that Scorpio is the sign par excellence in which the huge battles of the second initiation are occurring. So this is the one we're used to. It's light on the mountaintop. There's a lot of Venus involved here because Venus is the hierarchical ruler. And basically, from another perspective, Capricorn rules all the first five initiations. So maybe he wants to look at this generally and say, well, it's not only the third degree, we're dealing with the first five initiations here, where Capricorn is somehow always present in some way. Now, you know, every one of us, we have a sign of the zodiac, or maybe a couple, that are associated with our egoic lotus and causal body. You know, we are souls on the higher mental plane, and on the higher mental plane, there is a kind of astrology of your causal body and of your egoic lotus. So, you know, we're not so much in a position to know what those signs are, but maybe people can start to intuit that. And Foster Bailey hinted at that. I think it was in the introduction to Discipleship in the New Age, maybe volume 2. But it really arrested my attention when he talked about that, because I said, well, okay, I'm dealing here with the horoscope of my personality, basically. And it will indicate how the different rays can come in to my personality and how the soul can come in. And it will also be a collection of all the horoscopes I've ever had. My causal body will be that. but I'm not yet dealing intelligently and clearly with the horoscope of that entity that we are called the soul on the higher mental plane. That's what we have to learn to deal with, and maybe he'll give us some hints. The next one, this is a tough one. The crisis of renunciation, crucifixion, and he gives us Gemini. And you might think, why Gemini, for heaven's sake? I mean, we can talk about Scorpio and Leo. Leo is the brilliant causal body, and Scorpio is the destructive force which undermines that causal body, or even Vulcan that helps shatter the causal body. There's a lot of signs that can contribute to the crucifixion. Although I must admit, you know, in the Sabian symbols, there are some very interesting images in Gemini that have to do with, you know, with driving the nail in. But in general, Gemini is a very second-ray sign. Got a little bit of the third ray in it because it is the third sign. And it and one of my friends says, well, really, well, DK says it's the head of the cosmic Christ, okay? And another friend says, put Gemini on top of Orion because Orion doesn't have a head. And Orion is the cosmic Christ for us, and the head is Gemini. And they're both very located near each other in space. So anyway, Gemini's connection with the second aspect of divinity and the love aspect, implicating the heart through which the fourth initiation is experienced. You know how it goes: sacral center, first initiation; solar plexus, second initiation; ajna center, third initiation; heart is the fourth initiation, but the heart is growing all the time. The two planets involved in the fourth initiation are Mercury and Saturn, in relation to the Earth with its cross as the symbol of crucifixion. And with Gemini, there is a tearing. So we see it happening all the time. You know, such a fight between the opposites, a tearing or rending process. The pairs of opposites are pulling in two directions. And and man must leave behind the lower of the pairs of opposites. Very painful. And, you know, they used to have a form of execution where they, it's a horrible thing, but it's kind of related to Sagittarius and Gemini, where they tied your arm and your arm and your leg and your leg to four horses and told the horses to ride off in different directions. So, you know, you literally get torn apart there. And that is one of the things that happens with this dynamic tension of the pairs of opposites. At the same time, the great love energy is coming in. So maybe Gemini is an unusual... When I first saw this, I said, why Gemini? You know, and then I began to think about it. And there are other qualities here as well. I mean, the renunciation of Pisces and the universalization of Aquarius, those are important signs. And remember, the glory of the egoic lotus under Leo, destroyed by Scorpio. There are different combinations you can use. And if you'll take the excruciating time to listen through at least some of this book that I have available on Makara and maybe also on YouTube, I think it's just called The Egoic Lotus, something like that. I'm really going through the astrology and reality of every initiation in relation to every petal of the egoic lotus, okay? So I think, you know, you might find that interesting if you want to get into the details of how these things work. And remember, that's one of the ways that Master DK teaches. He's on the ray of meticulous entirety. And some of us, when we're frustrated late at night, we call it the ray of ridiculous entirety. But okay, we learn a lot of how everything fits together. So we have Gemini here. See, because basically a huge love energy comes in at the fourth initiation, and you do come in touch with the higher of the pairs of opposites. You come in touch with the monad and the soul personality representing the lower pairs of opposites. That is the mutable cross, okay? And maybe time for one more, and then I'll, because I don't want to talk here forever, because there'll be things that you want to ask and things that you want to say. The crisis of the battlefield. So in a way, how long does that battlefield last? Well, it certainly lasts for the first three initiations. And in another sense, the fourth initiation is nothing but a battle, a huge one. But beyond that, maybe it doesn't go, because the consciousness becomes so strong that it can see what's really happening. So he says, look, you're struggling here, and you're taking the second initiation, and your life is filled with misery and struggle and all the rest of it, and you think you're taking the fourth initiation, but you're not, because the fourth initiation is really approached in a very level, clear-eyed, clear-sighted manner, and you have to be worthy of it and granted permission to do it. So it maybe it's like a completely different viewpoint than Jesus on the cross, that you go into most churches and the agony is there and all that. It's a different thing, you know. A lot of people are not even dying at the fourth initiation. If you're in the East, it's the great renunciation, and they, a lot of Vulcan, and they go off in a cave, a rocky cave or whatever, and they manage to live through it and to become monadically infused and to be very powerful in their solo isolation, Vulcan, planet of isolation. So before the third initiation, there's a lot of this conflict and struggle. And it's a different kind, less personal, you might say, after the third initiation. Well, I'm not going to go any further right now, because I feel that this might be end of reading, SCOT, Signs of Triangles, number 48, and our day here is the 28th of August, and resumes on blah, 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 the next Wednesday, the 4th of September, okay? And it'll be a morning program. Now, I don't even know where we just were here, but something just happened. Right. Okay. So now what's happening? Okay, there we are. It was the 4th September 19. It's a Wednesday. Okay. And it'll be the morning hour. All right. Well, look, you know, I realize, friends, you know, DK is an amazing teacher, and it sometimes seems like he doesn't leave any detail out of the whole picture. And yet for us, you know, he's saying, look, I'm just giving you the ABCs here. Okay, so we're like overwhelmed with all this detail. But he says, remember that the second ray is also not just the ray of detailed unity and meticulous entirety, but the ray of the divine pattern. And what we should be seeing is all these different patterns of squares, stars, triangles, you know, that kind of thing. Six-pointed stars, you know, they get rarer as you go on. But we've got to see the patterns that underlie the delivery of energy. So the next time we get together, we'll talk about the crisis of the birthplace, and he'll give it to Virgo, and then this very amazing thing, the crisis of the burning ground. How many burning grounds are there? Quite a few. But he's giving this one to Leo, and I figure it's something that happens before the fifth initiation. So, you know, here we are, students of Master DK, and we've all been mystics, and we've all been in the monasteries and the convents, and we've, you know, had a lot of that Piscean training, and maybe even before, you know, in Grecian times and so forth. And now we're asked to memorize and understand the details regarding the energies. And we can do that and still keep our mystical union. Pretty much what we're doing at the same time, two things at the same time. We've lived a lot of karma under Saturn, okay? But now we are cultivating Neptune and Uranus at the same time, the three synthesizing planets. And there's a lot of cultivation to be done there, you know, showing you the, I'm sure you've seen this, but let me just see if I can get anything out of this. I don't know. These are the ones, the two you made, they're excellent. Well, here we go. You know, this is greater Saturn. This is esoteric Saturn with all of its amazing geometry that you could think about long and hard. And here are the two planetary tendencies not articulated, so we really know what's going on there. There's no geometry there. It's just a generalization. Here's the occult mind, and here is the identificatory mystical mind, and the two things have to go together. And that's what we're trying to do with our two curricula, like, you know, the curriculum of the Mahamaya, which is everything that seems to be happening, and the curriculum of being, with which is the search for the one great reality. Okay, so on and on. And, you know, watch out for Gemini, on and on. Told you that one, didn't I? You know, recovery program for children of Gemini parents. They really need it, you know. It's called on and on. All righty. I didn't have Gemini parents, but my children, unfortunately, have a parent with a lot of Gemini. Okay, so your thoughts, anything you want to ask or say about this, it's okay. Sorry, you know, sometimes it's tough. Sometimes I can't even log in. I remember just chasing around and say, well, can't have a webinar here. I can't even get in the program. Because whenever they improve things, you know, it takes a couple of weeks before you know what they're doing and before they know what they're doing. So everything's going to be fine. Thanks for being here. Okay, your thoughts about these crises that you may recognize that you are going through. You know, I mean, are you, you know, from what we've got here, probably it could be the birth, but, you know, some very sincere students of DK who stick with it, they probably have gone a bit beyond that. The crisis of the battlefield, I don't think anybody here is going through the crisis of the big renunciation, but there's a lot of little ones that one does. The crisis of initiation, one may recognize that, one, two, three, along the line. As far as the crisis of orientation, it took place a long time ago. So you are already reoriented and toward the spirit. But on the other hand, you can further orient yourself towards the monad and not just the soul. And you have to understand symbolically what the crisis of incarnation might be, because you've taken that, and now you're in the reincarnational cycle, but you might be trying to incarnate the egoic lotus, the spiritual triad, and even that the monad should walk the earth as it does for the masters. You might be trying those kinds of incarnations. So anything you want to say about this or ask, the floor is open.
Michael.
Yeah. Is that you too? Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking, not going into that so much pondering upon the word crises, because there are crises all the time. But it was just today that I was pondering upon this, that in life, it is a rule, or it looks like it is a rule or some kind of law, that when one has reached any point and there is a short moment of satisfaction or contentment, but immediately after that comes always
a wave. And that's why I was thinking about the sea. And not only the physical sea, but this, because when we think about that, all lower planes from below the cosmic mental plane, we can think about that they belong to the substance of this super life. It's still this kind of form life in that sense, and we are in the matter long time. Yeah. We are cosmic physical plane, so that's why, like, the waves of the sea is telling so much about the life, that it is continuous waves. And I think it's the art of a life to understand that movement, that the life will never stop, and whatever it is, it will come this low, how it is called, this what moon makes this ebbs and flows.
Ebbs and flows. Ebbs and flows. Ebbs and flows. So you know, there is. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, so that there is this kind of movement, and to realize that it will be like that all the time. And I think that the older we become, we realize that it's wisdom not to respond to any of those lower vibrations. It just belongs to life, and just to stand still in those moments and let this crisis work within, and that will teach us to stay in life calm.
Yes. As a matter of fact, you're talking in a way just like there's a fourth ray thing that St. Paul was involved in, and some of the others, and it has to do particularly when people have a very strong fourth ray, and it says, having done all, to stand. And it has to do with a key word of the fourth ray, which is humanity's ray. It has to do with steadfastness, having done all, to stand, you see, because you know how the fourth ray is at first. It's just all over the place, but then finally it gains stability. I just wanted you know this one. Look, this is Brutus from Julius Caesar by Shakespeare. There is a tide in the affairs of men. Of course, you could say wave, okay? There is a tide in the affairs of men, which taken at the flood, that means the high point, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their life is bound in shallows and miseries. It's a fantastic statement about learning how to take the wave. And, you know, there's also this interesting thing about the surfers. They want to go out on the day when the big wave comes. But sometimes they can ride the wave. Sometimes there's a shark in the wave. Sometimes they're crushed and hurt by the wave. So, you know, all of those things are operative. And remember, too, I mean, you know this, but look, matter is water. And we're talking about the systemic astral plane here, and we're talking about the cosmic astral plane. And obviously they are oceans. They are oceans. And there have to be these great waves. Now, remember, too, what did he say about Sanat Kumara? Every day, color and sound is crashing on the shores of the earth. And that he called it the great ritual of Sanat Kumara. So this whole idea of the waves is a very, very important one. And so thanks for bringing that up. This is Brutus. Thank you. Know, Shakespeare is wonderful. You know, he's so fourth ray. You know, when it comes to my son-in-law, I just know we were in the Globe Theater together. And, it's just like going back 400 years to talk to him. And, you know, it's all that fourth ray stuff that took place in those days. Just imagine how wonderful it would be to have a playwright like Shakespeare or whoever he was, writing for you spontaneously so you could do the next play coming. I think fantastic. Okay, well, thank you for that, for those thoughts, Tuya. Other thoughts about all this? Thoughts, questions, whatever, you know? Having a nice crisis? I hope so. I manage to dig one up every once in a while here. Some are spiritual crises. Some are physical and personal crises with spiritual implications, if you handle them right. Some are just crises of physicality and events, and they are just on their own level. The ones we're looking for are the spiritual crises. So, you know, go out there with your, do you need a magnifying glass or a telescope or binoculars? What do you need? There's a crisis around the corner just for you. I know I'll get it later tonight when I review what I've just said. Anything, folks. What do you see?
Ishtar has a question that she put in the question box.
Ah, she does. Thank you. I thought it was from before. Thank you, Michael. Is the crisis challenges of personality flaws, and that's certainly one kind, and you are aware of them throughout interactions and gaining strength to respond differently, being mindful? Yeah, I mean, it brings in the Buddhism and it brings in the self-observation, and that's one kind of tendency within the personality to act in a certain, what can I call it? They say skandic way. You know, in India, there are these, they call them skandas. They're like skeins of thread. They come from the past and they carry over into the present, and they have momentum in them. And you sometimes have to break your skandas so you can be free of the past events. And the moon can carry those very much. And the moon is, in a way, the ruler of the personality. So, look, you know, we've got a lot of personality flaws, but we're not even aware of all of them. Sometimes someone helps to remind you that this is the case, and sometimes that somebody is wrong and they're just projecting their own personality flaws. But I tell you what, when you read DK's letters to his students, what you begin to understand is that he didn't pull his punches too far back. He pretty well nailed the things that were the obstacles in their personality life. And then he counted on them to face them like mature, grown-up people and to deal with these things. And some of them did, you know, and he could say, okay, this is progress. You've really faced your issues. And others just ran away, you know. So we have to ask ourselves, what would we do if the master presented us with our obvious personality flaws that maybe we just, you know, not tried to brush aside and all that? How would we deal with this? Because it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable in one way to see them ourselves, and it's even more uncomfortable for some people, most, to have somebody else and everybody else see them. So when you get into group work, you know, you just, it's not a hide and seek game. You're not hiding anything. You know, the group is one thing, and everybody gets to know everybody else, and somehow we all make it through, you know, somehow we all make it through. So yes, this is one type of crisis. Another type of crisis is when the soul is pouring in so powerfully that the personality is having difficulty handling it. And that's a crisis of overstimulation and all that kind of thing, you know. So yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. And being mindful is very important. It's just always observe what's happening says Roberto Saggioli, as if it's happening to someone else, so you can be truly objective about it. Many kinds of crises, as he's saying. Now, Helen here has a thought about regarding the crisis that involves another person's karma, or is it a reflection, now let's just see, of ourselves. Well, I think, you know, sometimes out of the goodness of the heart of the soul, like the Christ, he has nothing to gain particularly. An avatar has nothing particularly to gain by helping out. They just help out of the goodness of their heart. And they will certainly lift themselves, and the other person may benefit. On the other hand, karma is a... Excuse me. Sorry. Karma is a intricate matter. And where all of these weavings and interweavings began, some of them very far back. So we can't trace it yet. And it could be, indeed, a kind of situation that reflects our own involvement with the other person. And sometimes, of course, there is the issue of projection. Projection means pretty much you take your stuff, you put it on someone else, and you don't know you're doing that. You think, well, that person has all these qualities, and it's really, to a great extent, your own qualities that you're putting upon them. So that's then you learn in the process of trying to help them, because they have a certain amount of it, that, hey, wait a second, I've got to see these qualities in myself first, because I've attributed a lot to the other person. So, you know, there's degrees of complexity here. But generally speaking, if you're in a situation where it's a heavy karma, you can't get out of it, you don't want to get out of it, really, or even if you want to get out of it, you can't get out of it, because love or circumstance or whatever will not allow you to make an easy escape, then you know it has a real root in the past. And sometimes it's not that it's another person's karma or just your karma, it's both together. It's the interplay of what was set in motion a long time ago. So, you know, just there's a lot of different kinds of karma, DK would say, just like you said, the name of the name of glamour is legion. Legion, he would say. So many different types of glamour. And he tried to articulate these. And thus it is for karma too. And we'll get better at that as we learn some of the higher methods of abstract mind and intuition. We'll get better at seeing the root cause of an entanglement, which probably is meant to help one person or the other or both. And I don't think we should expect ourselves to know everything, but maybe a little bit of a hint will come. Anything else on that, Helen? I think that's maybe the best I can do at the moment. Or if somebody else has something they want to say about it, of course, please do, you know. Please write
Michael, I'm wondering if you could maybe think of it in the context of, you know, when you're in relationship with people and you're seeing this karmic event, it may be that it is part of one's own karma too. You know, there's karma on many levels, if you want to speak to that.
Sure. Well, that's correct. And we ourselves become part of the other person's karmic situation. So we may think, you know, this is a really difficult time for me, but think about the other person too. Mostly with karmic situations, I have seen an interaction and a both and kind of thing, not just one person or the other. But like I said before, it's possible even as a soul to have a soul contract and say, look, I'm going to help this person. It's a kind of a avataric impulse. And or we may be the person who is on the receiving end and being helped by someone who, out of the goodness of their heart, their soul love, said, I'm in a position to do that. It's been shown to me how I can help. And I have kind of an avataric impulse here. So, you know, let's look at the situation in detail and see whether it belongs to one, to the other, or both, and when it may have begun and what it's meant to achieve. Now, here's the thing. Sometimes people have holes in their causal body. In other words, where there should be qualities, there just aren't as it should be. Now, D.K. uses an example. He says a lot of disciples have been really well-trained mystics, but they're lacking the fifth ray. So the soul may sound a note at the beginning of the incarnational process, which calls in a fifth-ray personality, a fifth-ray mind, something of that nature, and they'll have to work with that and through that. But there's something else that may happen. You may find yourself associated with someone who has the qualities that you need. You may resent those qualities, you just haven't developed them, you know. Carl Jung says that the inferior function is always the one that's most difficult to develop. You know, he started out with like intuition, feeling, sensation, and thought. And he says we all have maybe one function that is inferior to the development of the others, and we're not so happy to develop it. But sometimes people are sent into our aura, or we into theirs, because we've got what they need or they have what we need. And, you know, you got to recognize those moments and not run away as soon as the messenger is at the door, as Master Moria always warns. He says, just as the messenger is knocking at the door, off the individual, maybe choosing the back door of the Leo cave, runs off into the woods, you know. So it takes a lot of caution to see what is the value of this somewhat painful, disturbing, disagreeable experience? Or it could be just the opposite. It could be wonderful and really restorative, you know. Well, you know, just examine your karmic situations with various people and try, because of your studies, to get more and more out of it. Thanks, Joel. Other thoughts that you want to bring forward at this time? Or questions, etc. You have to admit it's an interesting subject, you know, this idea of the crises through which we inevitably pass or will pass, with many minor sub-crises along the way, indicated by movements within astrology and changes of rays. There's all kinds of stuff going on. But what's the main issue here, you know? We have some life lessons, and however we get them, whether we wake up to what we need and somehow acquire it, whether we listen to the soul and somehow absorb, whether someone intrudes upon our life and apparently intrude, and somehow as a result of the interplay, you learn what you have to learn, and maybe they learn what they have to learn. There's all different kinds of ways of delivering the needed quality to the growth of the egoic lotus. Many different ways of delivering the quality that is needed. And so you say, what do I need in my egoic lotus here? You know, what do I need? And maybe you are smart enough to figure it out, and maybe you can figure out from where it's coming. And so then you learn to respect those sources, even though they may not always be pleasant. Does that make sense? At least it makes sense to me. Okay, anything else, folks? Anything else? Trying to look at this, you know, there's a large zodiacal issues going on here, you know. And there's ways of finding triangles here, you know, and you can combine a lot of these in sequence, zodiacal sequence, and you'll see how to move through the first, second, and third initiation, second, third, and fourth, third, fourth, and fifth, just by the planets you put together and the signs you put together, but let's not overestimate ourselves, because remember that DK told us that the esoteric groups are the most glamored of all the groups, okay? The most glamored of all the groups. So, you know, lest we leap to conclusions that seem to inflate our status, let's be cautious. I just read some, terrible nonsense from Master Kuthumi today. It came from somewhere. And I'm just shocked that the person who's writing this doesn't recognize that this is coming from her own subconscious mind. But the discernment we need now, because we're at a transitional phase where Master DK is going to write the third installment of a series of bridging treatises. And we don't want to be like the theosophists of old, some of whom finally, after years and years, awoke to the fact that the hierarchy might just be behind what Alice Bailey was writing, instead of just rejecting her out of hand. You know, we've got to be sharp. And studying his books, discussing them in depth and in detail, and then trying to apply what you learn, this is one of the best ways. Well, Otia, okay. Right, thanks, Tia. Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of things that we learn about, we can't apply them. You know, if he tells you that the one of the four Maharajas is a snake with a blue body and a red eye, it's going to be a little difficult to apply that. I was thinking about today, what am I going to do with that piece of information about these great beings that take their positions in the four corners of our solar system? Not much you can do. You can just kind of learn about it a little bit and hold it in reserve for when it really makes more and more sense. But there are some things he says that deal with our life of improved service to the plan, to people, our improved discipleship, and, you know, we can utilize those practical things. He's writing for a wide range of people. Sometimes I think he's giving hints to masters who are in his ashram. He's got some kind of five masters in his ashram. I'm not sure who they are, but, you know, in a way, think of it, he's kind of the head, in my view, of a 2-sub-3 ashram, Master DK. So there's 2-sub-3, sub-4, sub-5, sub-6, sub-7. Okay, that's 5. And I don't know if he's counting himself or not, but he has supervision over, you know, quite a few of the great ones. And sometimes I think that if the masters can read the last two books of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali and get something out of it, and they tend to do that, then when the book, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, is picked up, or certain things on the rays and initiations and all that, that can take you all the way up to the 7th initiation, you know, know, express, reveal, destroy, resurrect. That's the 7th initiation. If that is the kind of thing is presented, then he's dropping hints all over the place for different calibers of students. We just have to recognize what is useful to us and how we can best apply what is within our range to apply. Okay, thanks, Tia. Now, let's see, is there anybody else here, or are we ready to have just a little wrap-up? Let's see, what have we got coming now? Tomorrow, on the Ask program, it'll be, I think we're on the morning schedule, Soul of Nation, Reappearance of the Christ, that's it. And then on Friday, we have our Glamour webinar. It's on the morning schedule. And then, as usual, Saturday and Sunday, Soul of Nations with readings from The Destiny of Nations of the Nations. And also, we have the attracting financial resources for hierarchical purposes. You know, look, Tuya and I try to keep this going and going and going, because we know that among what we're offering here in the ASK program are a lot of the meditative approaches that DK said were very important to continue. He gave us two solid meditations, reappearance and the money meditation, and he also said the triangles work is work that must go on. He wasn't pulling any punches there. And when it comes to glamour, we're in the thick of it. It's everywhere. It's just amazing, you know, when you can kind of see through this nonsense. But okay, maybe one day not so long ago, it wasn't nonsense to us. Maybe we believed in that nonsense. Maybe we believed it and committed our resources in the wrong direction. No doubt it did happen once upon a time. And then, you know, we do different things with the Soul of Nations. It's a wonderful little book, that Destiny of the Nations. And sometimes we do take countries. It's a lot of research that goes into it. And we talk about the development of the country. See, not every country, just like not every human being, even has an integrated personality. There's a lot of countries that are working on just integrating their personality, yet alone having that soul substance really begin to infuse it. I think countries have soul moments, great moments when the soul descends and somehow passes through. They also have moments of rebellion when you doesn't look like you can see the soul in sight, you know? So watching that dance, that karmic interplay between the higher and the lower of the pairs of opposites, is very interesting when you study the nations. What is the literacy rate? You know, how many people really have an education? All of those things are very potent when it comes to what is the status of a nation in line with soul expression. And remember, we may be talking about 14 new esoteric schools. 7 of them will be preparatory and 7 will be advanced, but later, every developed nation will have its own esoteric school. And that's something towards which we can really work. It's very exciting. And, you know, 2,000 years of the Aquarian Age, there's no telling what we might be able to accomplish if we stay on track. Okay. Final call. Okay. Well, I appreciate your presence, and let's just make it, you know, easy here. Not a big, because we did this morning, you know, and I always like this one very much. So let's just kind of. Here's your own triangles network. Here's the triangles network of the planet. And here's the directors in Shambhala of the triangles network, probably with Sanat Kumara on that high level, being at the very center of triangles, and on a lower level, the Christ. Remember, when dealing with the Buddhas of activity, they may look like nice artistic renderings of something, but these beings have been planetary logoi in the previous major solar system. That's the kind of extent of the life that we're dealing with, and that a certain element of sacrifice is, they're working under a certain element of sacrifice which has them to be subsidiary to Sanat Kumara in this particular time of expression. So anyway, That's just... Think of all the triangles within our own etheric system. I mean, in general, of course. And the many triangles now forming between interested, spiritually inclined people, you know, so that we have our own little networks of those to whom we are related in triangles. And all through our planet, there's a network of triangles connecting people, communities, nations, and all of humanity somehow, increasingly. But the planets are connected too. There's all kinds of important triangles, not just within the planets, but between them. And that could be an exercise we undertake to note some of these significant triangles, maybe especially the ones that are including the Earth, like Venus, Mars, Earth, or Mercury, Venus, Earth, that kind of thing, or Vulcan, Mercury, Earth, you know. But the triangulation of our solar system leading to the spherical etheric body, spherical connections in our solar logos, that's all on its way. And our sun connected with Sirius and Alpha Centauri, or Sirius and Procyon, and there's a number of these solar triangles. We can't have too much to do with it just yet, but it's very interesting. And then the way certain stars connect with our Earth and other planets. And how these constellations relate to suns and planets, other planets, and how they relate to each other. DK has given you 7 big triangles that bring in the rays. You know, Aries, Leo, Capricorn, first ray. And on it goes. And really, on it goes, and on it goes. Although we can't know anything about it, maybe the masters do a little. There are going to be triangles between galaxies. We already know there's a tremendous relationship between our Milky Way and Andromeda. All we need is another one, which no doubt exists somewhere. And on it goes. And we're in this tremendous flow of energies, and we start at a very humble place. We want to help balance the energy so that the will of God, via the triangular or triangulating atmic plane, can make its way into the lower worlds. And we want to do this esoteric work fully cognizant of the, or let's call it increasingly cognizant of the passage of the energies. So we're in it, whether we want to be or not, and hopefully we are in it consciously and not just unconsciously. What I'd like to do is close our work here right now with the great invocation, and you can, you know, since you're on self-mute, you can say it out loud. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. Tuya and I would like to thank everybody for attending, and you know, lots of stuff is going out as various disciples, and both in the Moria Federation and not in the Moria Federation are doing their internet work. Remember, as DK kind of humbly said, the teaching goes forth over the radio. Well, we've got our radio all right. And you can tune in on any number of illuminating processes and benefit from them. So just go to the, you know, Moria Federation website, and some of these are listed, and you can find out easily what might be available. So lots of love, many blessings, and tomorrow it's the reappearance of the Christ meditation, that staple meditation to be done every Thursday, Jupiter Day, second ray day, and we try to hold to that. So glad you're here with us, and this will be converted and put on Makara as soon as may be possible. And then please, if you wish to go over some of what we did, you can listen again or not, and tell your friends about it, that they can also hear if they're interested in these subjects. So we'll see you before long, and bye for now.